Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thank you to Deborah Burks, who was on with us a couple of minutes ago. You know, when I used to see her standing up there against the side wall with Fauci and whoever else was there as the president years ago was doing those highly entertaining coronavirus briefings, I always wondered what she was thinking. And we gave her a chance to tell us what she was thinking. I haven't read her book. It's rare that I put somebody on the air. I haven't read the book, but I just heard today that she would be available. So I'll read the book and maybe report back to you. But anyway, given a chance to speak a little truth to that moment, I think she demurred. I don't want to be real critical of her because I haven't read the book. And I thought she was a voice of reason, even if sometimes in walking that fine line, she failed to be more of a voice. And if you read the wiki on her, you know that she was one of those families that also was having a big multi-generational Thanksgiving dinner when she was telling people not to have multi-generational Thanksgiving dinners. Granted, she lives in a multi-generational household, but she got caught. And so I will end this monologue by saying, I'll read the book and report back to you. One last note. He can't help himself. The thrust of her speech in Chicago today, the symposium she was speaking at, was about how we should better safeguard schools, K through 12. And she wasn't a total lockdown person there, was she? Which is fine. Maybe we shouldn't be. But the message I took from her is we need real-time testing. We need everybody to buy in. And with real-time testing, we can snuff these things out. She didn't say close the schools completely. You know, in the absence of real-time testing, that may have been the only tool we had in our box. Eric Zorn, are you listening to all this? I might. It's quite possible I won't shut up.
John, just let me in. I'll talk. Yes, absolutely. Nice to talk to you. No, I'm disappointed. I thought that I always thought, as the pandemic was unfolding, that Dr. Burks was one of those people, like Dr. Fauci has said he was, who were not being directly confrontational with President Trump because they wanted to remain on the inside, that they thought that challenging him would have just caused him to be immediately dismissed from the inner circle and would have diminished their influence, which they thought was important.
Agreed.
Now that the Trump administration is over and Trump is safely down in Mar-a-Lago for at least a few more years, it was time for her, I think. I was hoping that she would come out and say, look, this is why I did this. I was trying to remain a voice of reason here. I knew that what things he was saying were crazy. But if I had rushed the podium as that talk show host in Chicago suggested, then I would have just been fired and marginalized. So it's disappointing to think that she can't or doesn't now say that. And you're right what you were saying about how, you know, people say trust the science. The science is not a fixed target. The science moves. When we have a pandemic like this, or like we had, like we still have, I guess, in many ways, we have to keep reevaluating. We learn by doing. One hopes that we learned a great deal from this particular pandemic so that next time we'll know about how better to handle things like schools, how better to get testing done quickly and figure out how you can minimize the damage caused by these diseases. But they're going to get it wrong. And I think it's clear in retrospect that some of the, you know, quote unquote science did get it wrong in the pandemic. But that's not a shame. That's what science is. Science gets things wrong until it gets things right. And science trusts the results that it gets. And is always willing, scientists are always willing to change what they think and what they believe based on the evidence that they get. So if they're loath to do it,
sometimes, you know, if you hitch your wagon to a theory and you've dedicated a lot of your life to it, I understand why sometimes some people have to be persuaded. We do have conflicting scientific reports. Look at the debate around climate change. But at the end of the day, it's the consensus becomes clearer and clearer. That's just the way it works.
And yeah, it's a fairly overwhelming consensus, too, when it comes to climate change. Let's not forget.
But it wasn't. I mean, even if it was, there was I could probably right now get a panel of 10 highly regarded scientists who will say that global warming is not exacerbated by mankind.
10, maybe. I don't know how highly regarded they would be, but you're right. You're right. But I think you have to look at what the weight of evidence is showing, what the weight of scientific consensus is, and that's all you can do, because you and I are not climate scientists. I'm not a climate scientist. Maybe you are.
I'm an expert. I'm an epidemiologist, climate scientist. This is not why I asked Eric Zorn to join us today. He is the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel. It's a weekly newsletter containing commentary and more. Search for the Picayune Sentinel online, or you can email ericzorn@gmail.com. Of course, the longtime Tribune columnist, and his writing occasionally appears in the Daily Herald. One last point, though, about what you were saying about Deborah Birx and Anthony Fauci's desire to at least stay within the administration, be that voice of reason. If they get kicked out for telling the truth or tackling the president, then maybe they haven't served this country that well. I use that argument all the time pre-pandemic when I said, if you had a chance to be in Donald Trump's administration, should you serve, especially in a role like chief of staff? And you will keep the crazies out, and you'll marginalize the crazy instincts and manage that office. And some people felt that, no, it's toxic if you go in and you come out toxic. You should not do that. Where were you on that, Eric?
Well, I was with the people who thought that it's better to have people on the inside who are trying to put the bumpers on the bowling alley, you know, because when you have someone like Trump who's so erratic and so, you know, guided by gut instincts, you needed these voices of reason, these people who knew Washington, who knew legislation, who knew policy, who could gently correct him. Now, of course, a lot of those people got in and then got fired or run out of the office. But I thought, you know, if I were in a situation like that, I would really try to be the wait a second person in that office. I would try to be the person who gently tried to nudge the ship of state a little bit more toward a safe course. But I don't think that people just saying, I'm not going to serve in the White House, I'm not going to try to advise this president. I think that's abdicating a duty to your country, frankly.
That's an interesting way to put it. Okay, a couple of things you wrote about in the Picayune Sentinel. One are the predictions of the red wave and what happened, and also what happened at the Obama Presidential Center. I'll ask you to talk about both of those. This story in Chicago sure did get a lot of attention late last week, this weekend. What do you make of that, Mr. Zorn? Go back to the Obama Presidential Center. What were your thoughts about that?
Well, I was sorry about that. My computer just went nuts on me. On last Thursday, a noose was found in the Presidential Center where their construction is going on. And the Tribune made a huge front page story. They stopped construction down there. It was international news. The BBC, The Guardian, The Washington Post, CBS News reported it. Also, we made a huge deal about this, and it was clearly either a hate crime or somebody trying to make it look like a hate crime. I don't think we've gotten to the bottom of it. But my feeling is that when you have something like this, it really pays not to give the person who did the deed, whether the person is a sincere racist or just a prankster or false flag flyer or whatever, that I don't think you want to give that much attention to somebody doing that. I think you only encourage the next person who wants to make racist graffiti or drop a noose on a fence somewhere. I thought that coverage was bad, and it brings up the question, when you have incidents like this, how do we determine, how do we separate what's just a one-off act of one person, a crazy person doing something to try to yank everybody's chain, and what is a serious threat to people, to a community, and how do we put that into perspective? And it just felt to me like it was that the coverage of it was way out of scale. We don't know who put it there. We don't know why they put it there. And to stop construction and to put it on the front page of the paper amplifies this message that whoever put it there wanted to have broadcast.
I heard a report that some of the construction workers were going to undergo sensitivity training or something, as though it was something like that, as though they had something to do with it or they were so traumatized by it. I didn't understand that. I didn't know why the construction on that site had to stop. I was a little, I don't know if I'm as, I don't know that I'm completely with you on this, Eric, but you know what I was also thinking, though, is that is the difference between this incident and maybe the painting of swastikas on the headstones in a Jewish cemetery. That is, I think that that does represent something happening in our city, that there is a force behind it in our culture, the anti-Semitism. Lord knows there's plenty of racism directed towards blacks, but I think we've seen several incidents around the Jewish community of hate, and I, like you, thought maybe this one incident at the construction site represents whom? How many people? Is there some organization or movement behind it? We had no evidence that that was the case.
Yeah, we don't make a big deal of it when somebody shouts a racial slur at somebody at a bar or on the street, which is, of course, a reprehensible thing to do. But I think if we put it on the front page of the paper, like somebody called somebody, a bad word on the streets of Chicago, that would only, I think, generate more people calling bad words. When it comes to things like anti-Semitic graffiti and so on, I think when you start looking for patterns and things happening a lot, I feel like you don't want to give too much power to one vandal, whatever their motivation might be. Their motivation might just be to get attention. And when you give them the kind of attention that the news media gave this person or these people who did this for one incident, there's no question in my mind that the noose is a powerful symbol and it is a symbol of hate. There's no doubt about that. This is not an accidental slip knot somebody tied in a boating piece of rope or something like that. It's supposed to carry that meaning. The question is, who put it there? Why? Was there a danger to the workers there that could not have been addressed by, say, increasing security on the site? I mean, stopping construction on the site for several days. It was stopped yesterday. I don't know this morning whether it's still stopped. But that just seems to me like the kind of reaction that the person who does this wants, that you're only going to encourage people to do more of this when you give them such a reaction. It's like when you tell your kids, don't give your sibling the gratification of reacting when they tease you. Like,
right.
It's like, it's kind of like, don't give them the satisfaction. And I feel like that ought to be at least the first thought that we have when we have a situation like this, is let's try to put this into perspective and let's ask ourselves, how big a threat is this? How big a pattern is
sure,
this?
Sure,
no question
sure.
There's racism in Chicago. But I feel like this is something that we need to be careful about how much we give attention to something like that.
Eric Zorin's the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel. You can email him at gmail.com, and he'll add you to his mailing list. I'll talk to you on the Mincing Rascals podcast tomorrow. Eric, thanks for your time today.
Look forward to it, John. Thank you. Bye.
That's Mr. Z.